we started this process of obtaining sustainability reports and annual reports and other documents, there were some rather questionable responses that they provided, some questionable information in some of the publicly available documents on their website. And that led us to say, hey, there's something here that we need to document because there are some underlying issues that are very problematic.
The world, for sure, it's an audit. It needs its own kind of slightly robust standards that it adheres to, that it can use consistently, and that should be comparability across the organizations that are going through this process.
Right, it's important because we need to manage climate change. We need to manage growing income inequality. We need to manage a world where we're facing a war at the same time as we face sort of the climate crisis. So information about it is really important, but also information needs to be trustworthy.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to maximize their impact, because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Beredovitz, founder of Spring Impact. As climate change accelerates, shareholders and consumers are increasingly interested in making sustainable choices. Companies are putting sustainability assurance, a certification for the sustainable production of products and services, at the forefront of their agenda. But they often present this data in a way that makes them seem more environmentally friendly than they actually are. In this episode of our special series with Stanford Social Innovation Review, or SSIR, we're discussing how sustainability reporting can be used for greenwashing. Our guests are researchers Donna Carmichael, Kasbi Sunawala, and Judith C. Stroll. They're the authors of the SSIR article Sustainability Assurance is Greenwashing, where they lay out findings from their investigation into some of the world's largest companies. In our conversation, we talk about the lack of mandated standards for sustainability assurance and how it can lead to greenwashing. On the show, we also address the urgent need to improve these reporting practices to make informed decisions and take better care of our environment. In early 2021, Kasbi and Judith began to study the sustainability assurance practices of the Financial Times Stock Exchange 100 Index, also known as the FTSE 100. Donna came on board to help with the data collection process.
The process involved crawling through each of these companies, primarily their websites, and obtaining all of the publicly available information that they reported in terms of their sustainability reporting and disclosure and verification, if they did independent verification. So we started with that as our target population. As I went digging through the underlying data and understanding the reporting that they'd done, certain questions arose. Sometimes it is a question of clarification. They didn't express something in a way that was understandable. So I reached out by email generally to obtain the clarification to make sure I was reading it properly and understanding what they were saying. In other cases, it was missing information. So they didn't provide their verification letter. So it was a question of obtaining that because that is an important part of the overall project that we undertook here, to see how many and who is providing independent verification and what does that look like. So out of the ones that we started this process of obtaining, downloading basically sustainability reports and annual reports and other documents, there were about 10 or 12 that I ended up reaching out to. And from those, that really is what led to the article, that there were some rather questionable responses that they provided, some questionable information in some of the publicly available documents on their website. And that led us to say, hey, there's something here that we need to document and try to kind of communicate this because there are some underlying issues that are very problematic.
Many of these companies were doing greenwashing or presenting the data in a way that would paint them as environmentally responsible.
numbers tell a story, and numbers are not a hard truth.
That's Judith.
They are a constructivist concept of understanding the world. So people have thought up these numbers, right? They've come from a place, they have a logic that lies behind them. And really fundamentally, they're an analysis of what's going on and not a mirror of the truth. And so that very much applies to accounting and very much applies to auditing, right? It really tells us a story and it's not the hard truth. So we need to analyze it and not just, you know, believe it as given truth. I think it's also important to say that it's not just blatant lies, right? Greenwashing can be many things. We call it deception, obfuscation, and diversion, but there are others out there where there are seven lies of greenwashing. And it's all about essentially, you know, presenting information in a suggestive way. It can also just be a vague communication that suggests a better performance, or, you know, citing a standard that perhaps is unknown, but, you know, suggests that something is positive, even though it isn't. So again, it's not just about lies. It's about sort of communicating badly in general. And I would argue that more than half of the greenwashing incidences that are out there in the world didn't start with the will to greenwash, but are rather just, you know, incidences of, you know, not thinking communication through, communicating too early, not communicating holistically enough by sort of, you know, adding all the needed information and things like that. So it's really more of a continuum rather than a black and white thing.
Having accurate information about the environmental impact of companies affects the decisions investors, consumers, and regulators make. Ultimately, it affects our environment.
In order to be able, as a society in a capital market, to judge whether or not companies are doing enough in the area of, let's say, emission reductions, you know, reaching net zero, all of these targets and goals that are being outlined, in order to judge whether or not that is actually happening, we need climate reports, right? And what are climate reports? Climate reports essentially are hopefully robust measurements of how much an organization is emitting of various gases. But not just that, right? It's not just about climate. It's also about how they're treating their employees, whether or not they're taking care of biodiversity in nature, whether or not they're being ethical in their governance structures and in how they lead their businesses. I mean, all of this is part of the sustainability debate, climate being the most urgent and the most obvious. Now, in reporting this, the problem is that we currently don't have any standards. There are standards that are being developed and there are standards from NGOs, but none of this is actually fundamentally mandated. And so the reports that we see from companies, even from large, you know, the largest organizations within the UK, and you know, similar things are happening all around the world, they're only to a certain part comparable. And the processes that underlie this, so the way that these reports are being constructed and this data is being collected, is far from being standardized. And so, you know, as an audience, be it a regulator, be it an employee, be it an investor, whoever may want to read these reports, it is really not obvious whether these reports are trustworthy, whether they are robust, and where the data comes from. And so this is where assurance becomes really important in order to create that trust. It really is about how can we make this incredibly important information more credible, right? In order to then use it in order to try and build a better capital market.
Globally, the Big Four, the world's four largest accounting firms, do over 60% of sustainability audits. Is there a set of problems that you think arises out of having the Big Four, Deloitte, PwC, KPMG, Ernst & Young, doing the majority of this work?
So I think we need to be careful here because obviously there are going to be huge benefits as well. So it's, there is a bit of a balance.
That's Casby.
So obviously the Big Four, or even beyond the Big Four, sort of well-established accountancy firms have processes, they've got a huge body of knowledge, they've got infrastructure, they've got the resources to quickly come up to speed if there is new standards or new standards or new regulations. So they can bring a lot of that in with them. Of course, there are certain challenges, as you rightly so said. Perhaps a lot of them come in with very financial reporting mindset, because that's kind of the world they've been embedded in. And that's been the sort of bulk of their business for, well, generations and several decades. But it is possible perhaps they're missing the wider impact view. There are also concerns, historically documented, not just around sustainability assurance, but other services that they provide, where there can be conflicts of interest if they're providing multiple services to the same firm. So it's not necessarily all bad, but I think it's something to be aware of and perhaps keep an eye on.
Even though most auditing is done by the Big Four, Judith explains that there isn't one mandated standard for sustainability assurance.
There are multiple standards which are not mandated. So there is an NGO on the one hand, an international organization on the other hand, that do give standards. And then, you know, usually the Big Four, they sort of come up with their own templates that they then use. So there's reoccurring things that you see and tailored language that resurfaces in the assurance statements, but it's certainly not consistent as you would see it in the financial auditing world. And it's not a regulated standard. So that's also, you know, adding to the confusion. All of this is evidence for the extreme low prioritization that sustainability reporting and sustainability assurance gets in some of these companies. Because if you were to imagine something similar to happen in the financial reports, I mean, the investor community would just go mad, right? They would get calls from all of the investors. They probably would, see falling stock prices. I mean, that would simply not be accepted. In the sustainability space, I think it's a capacity issue internally. I don't think there's a lot of people that actually work on it. And B, it's a prioritization issue, right? It's just not the most important, or it's not seen as the most important issue. And so we can only speculate if some of this is wanted or not wanted, but it certainly, I think a lot of it is simply comes down to prioritization and capacity.
Hey Mission to Scale listeners, I wanted to share the news of an exciting opportunity. Spring Impact has recently opened applications for a fully funded consultancy program for NGOs working to address women's empowerment across Malawi, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. If you have a program, intervention, or service that you know works well and are ambitious about scaling up so you can reach more people and make an even greater impact, this could be a great fit for you. Visit springimpact.org to find out more and apply by 12th December. If you know any NGOs in the region who could really benefit from this opportunity, please do share this information with them. Now back to the show. So let's talk a bit about the research process and collection of data. And Donna, from what you've said already, it sounds like it was pretty challenging. Could you maybe give a couple of examples as the sort of challenges you faced when you were gathering the data?
Yeah, I think one of the major challenges is just the variability in the naming conventions for reports, in where they were stored and made available on the website, at the nomenclature, even within the reports, the standards, massive variability. And part of that is, as Judith said, there really aren't standards that are kind of part of the regulatory scene. So a big issue was just locating this information. In some companies, they called it a sustainability report. In others, they called it a corporate social responsibility report. There are many different names for this. Some it was an ESG report. Others had an integrated report where they combined their financial and sustainability information in one document. Others, the data was separate in an Excel spreadsheet. The verification letter, which is a critical piece, sometimes was not even included in their actual sustainability report. It was stored somewhere else on their website or at a different website, such as CDP. So finding that was not a simple matter when you expect that would be a critical component of any sustainability reporting. That letter is critical, but often it wasn't included. And sometimes I had to reach out to companies to actually ask them for it, which is shocking in itself. The other shocking part is in at least one case, when I asked for the letter, it was denied. And that makes no sense at all. If you are reporting that your data has been independently verified and you don't provide proof, and the letter that accompanies that and provides the evidence for that, that is very suspect in our view.
From your work, I mean, what do you think the chances are that any of these investors are then going and doing some of this digging and finding it out?
Zero. In fact, you know, what I find fascinating is, you know, part of the game here is not only for companies, corporations to attract capital and investment, and increasingly ESG ratings are becoming an important part of that. So investors, certainly institutional investors, are looking at companies saying, you know, what are your ratings in terms of your ESG? And there are countless and growing number of outside firms that are doing these ESG ratings, Morningstar and many others. And the fact of the matter is that a higher ESG rating is going to put you in a more favorable position in the capital markets. So you have this built-in bias to making sure that you look as good as you possibly can. And that causes problems, because people will look at ESG ratings, but they probably will not do the deep digging that we did to really understand some of the potential kind of deceptions that they're actually happening. Most of the companies that we named in our article, if you look at their ESG ratings on various indices, they're all really good. So who do you trust, right? So that's what it boils down to, is can you trust the ratings agencies? Can you trust the company and what they're saying in their reports? Our research has shown that you can't take everything they say at face value.
Sustainability assurance could become more accessible if companies provided complete information.
This is no rocket science, right? It's about sort of giving full explanations of process and scope. It's about acquiring full and consistent information, not being really clear how do you select the information that you have assured. There's 3 out of 100. Well, tell us why those 3. Why are they important? You know, what frameworks have you used? Important? Is it limited or reasonable? I mean, that's really something you should get down and, you know, you should have correct and provide all the supplementary information that is needed to understand the report. None of this, I think, is illogical, but it requires a good process. It requires, you know, some people working on it. It requires attention, prioritization. And so I think that's currently what's lacking.
How optimistic are you that companies will actually do that in reality?
We are in a transitioning world on this. And I think we are probably moving to a space where eventually, I suspect, there will be some sort of convergence.
That's Casby again.
There'll be some sort of processes percolating through and distilling through that we'll get to a stage where there will be greater organization. But currently, I think we are very much on that part of the journey where it is still pretty chaotic. It's still very much each one does their own thing. And, you know, some of it makes more sense than others. There's definitely pressure to make this space more organized and clearer, and where we're going to end up with that, again, is probably at this stage, I suspect the jury's still out on.
Yeah, I may be a little less optimistic, only because there really are no consequences for what we observed here. There's nothing illegal about it, but it is definitely greenwashing in several different flavors. And unless investors and regulators start to put pressure, there really is not a lot of downside. It can be written off as, oh, it was a mistake, it was an oversight, we don't have the resources, the capacity to do this properly. Then it may not change much very quickly.
It is perhaps worth mentioning that there is regulation from the European Commission coming out that is looking to mandate auditing, at least in certain companies, of sustainability information. So the so-called CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, you know, which starts to phase in next year, does require large companies to do a limited assurance of their sustainability or non-financial information. And so while we do not know if that will increase the quality of it, it will certainly increase the quantity of it. And so likely, you know, that will move some parts. Unfortunately, there is a concern that, you know, just regulating a bad process doesn't make a process good or meaningful. And so there's still likely a need for, you know, a professional standard in order to really make the most of the potential of assurance for sustainability information.
Donna explains that not only are there no consequences for companies that do not provide sustainability assurance, there is a financial cost for companies that do.
If you look at the US, for example, ESG has become highly politicized and very much the focus of some people saying, why should we do this? It costs business money. It costs money not only to adhere to ESG principles and factors and to adjust your company strategy and performance to align with that, but it costs you money to track this information and report it and to have it independently verified. It's a cost to business. And that becomes a bit of a challenge to moving the needle more towards robust ESG disclosure and verification, because the argument is, well, it costs money, so why should we penalize businesses and put the onus on them when it could result in lower profitability, less jobs created, less taxes paid, all of those arguments that are against the requirement for ESG reporting and verification.
And what would you say to refute those arguments?
The planet is at stake.
I think planet at stake is the big one, but then there's also, you know, if companies are named in shame, then it becomes a real cost to them. And so I'm wondering if anyone has thought like things like indexes, where you do name and shame the companies that aren't as good, but you also celebrate the ones that are doing this fabulously well. Has anyone tried something like that in this space? Would it work?
Well, I don't think anybody's done the type of deep dive into the data that we have. I could be wrong. Maybe that's what's required to kind of bring these to the surface and make them more visible and transparent to people.
Ultimately, Donna, Casby, and Judith remind us how important it is not to take data at face value.
Take this stuff seriously. Like, disclosed information matters, reporting matters. I know it sometimes seems like a boring space, and, you know, particularly if you're not an accountant, then it becomes quickly overwhelming to see hundreds and hundreds of pages of information. But disclosed information shapes perceptions, it shapes behaviors, right? A whole capital market is built on this kind of information.
As we take more seriously the impact our practices have on the environment, the job of today's guests is crucial. However, as they point out, it is only the first step towards establishing reliable sustainability assurance. I hope that our conversation encouraged you to question the way companies present their data. If you're interested in learning more about what we discussed in this episode, don't forget to visit ssir.org, where the winter 2023 issue of the SSIR magazine is available now. There you can read the article, Sustainability Assurance is Greenwashing. A link to purchase the magazine is in our show notes. And of course, you'll find many other fascinating articles in there too. Before we go, we'd like to thank SSIR for the work they do and for partnering with us in this series. If you love Mission to Scale, please recommend our show to a friend or colleague. You can subscribe or follow our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll catch you in our new episode next week. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter.